Welcome to Mustard Enemies. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And we rap about things in the entertainment industry. We keep it real for the kids. Movies, DVDs, yeah. TV, tech, video games, that sort of thing. Anyway, I have seen no new movies. Hellboy's out this weekend. I'm supposed to see it later today. Mm-hmm. I watched my borrowed copy of your Hot Fuzz this week.
Oh, yeah.
Neither my wife and I were really, we were like, huh, that's not quite what we were expecting. It was good, but the third act was kind of weird. And maybe I would have been better prepared if I'd actually seen Shaun of the Dead, which is essentially the same creative team.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but it's totally different than Shaun of the Dead, but it's basically an attempt to bring a certain kind of genre movie to, I guess, sort of like a, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it's a weird movie, but I liked it, but yeah, it was kind of surprising. It was kind of like an American genre movie. But it was funny. I liked it.
Well, then towards the end when, you know, sort of all these English town residents bust out their guns and I was like, you know what? That was in the commercial.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about that. And it's sort of this weird, that's a bit of a plot revelation, and I don't know. Anyway, it was just an odd film. But I like Simon Pegg, so anyway. God, movie-wise, I think that's all that's happening with me.
Well, I saw Hellboy on Friday. I liked it. It was good.
Cool. Was it my, and you've seen the first one, correct?
Oh, of course, many times.
I saw it not too long ago, and I thought, you know, it's a pretty good film, but there's a couple of beats that don't work. Like, they sort of overplay his whole world-weary, funny thing a little too much.
Yeah.
Like this, oh, crap. And I'm not sure it's, when you're trying to do that sort of thing, it's such a fine line to walk between, you know, nailing it and having it work and be funny and just having it kind of like be a groaner and just not work.
Yeah.
And for me, what, did you find that there was,
it was,
did it better in the second
one? Well,
let's
put it this way. I think it's essentially the equivalent of the first one. So, if you're not into that, the second one is just about the same. So if you can get beyond that, it was pretty good. The thing that I liked about the second one, it was kind of like, it was what I was kind of hoping it would be when we talked a couple weeks ago about it, in that watching the previews, it was clear that a lot of the visual elements were very much from the mind of Guillermo del Toro, a la his Pan's Labyrinth movie, and that definitely was the case here. It was sort of like the first Hellboy seemed more from the mind of the creator of Hellboy,
Mike Mignola.
Yeah, and this one here was like that, but it definitely had a lot more crazy, interesting stuff of interesting oddball I won't say people, but characters that I loved. I mean, just really unique that you don't see anywhere else. The final, I mean, it's not going to make any surprise, the movie's called The Golden Army, so that he ends up fighting this Golden Army at the end, and I loved them. I thought they were awesome, and it's totally unique. It's a comic book movie, but it just is a totally different feel that isn't quite mainstream, but still pretty dang good, you know, and I liked it a lot. So, I like Ron Perlman. I love Selma Blair, and they have this new character.
Oh, she's yummy.
Yeah. They have this new character, this guy, who's this basically vapor that's in this, basically walks around in what appears to be like a 19th century.
Oh, I lost you, dude. I can't hear you. So night. 19th century.
So anyway, it's like a 19th century diving helm or diving suit, and it was great. I mean, it just looked perfect. And as I was watching it, I just couldn't help but thinking, you know, what it reminded me of was that that God, if only they had hired Guillermo del Toro to do The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, that's a good thought.
Because there was a lot of little visual stuff in here that just, it so clearly didn't work in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen that so clearly worked here. And I just thought, man, that movie was so bad, but it really is an interesting concept and really was a great idea for a movie. It was just so executed so horribly. And I just thought, man, he would have done a great job. Anyway, I liked it. In preparation, I watched Hellboy, the original one on DVD, like last week, just to kind of remind myself of it. And, you know, it was a great continuation. I liked it. And it's weird. The reviews have been really good. And I get the feeling, you know, how sometimes certain movies, there's just sort of a critical reaction that is sort of like everybody's sort of on the same wavelength, and they give certain movies passes, or it gets much better reviewed than maybe because of a certain number of factors. And this movie got very good reviews, but I get the distinct feeling that a lot of people are giving it a pass basically based on good feelings towards Del Toro and other stuff, because I actually don't think it's deserving as quite the rapturous, reviews it's getting. But you almost get the feeling that critics are sort of giving it a pass because they see it's a summer of comic book movies and they're thinking, but this one's different. It's like, it's more adventurous than the other one, so we're going to give it a pass. So, anyway.
Well, it's doing, you know, I briefly skimmed Wells this morning, and he said it's on track to do $35 million this weekend, and he was only expecting in the 20s, so.
Yeah. But that said, $35 million, that's, you know, in the scheme of comic book movies, is pretty small. You know, it's going to top out like at $100 million, maybe.
You know, that may be, but it's a niche character. It is not a Batman. There's almost, I mean, prior to the first one coming out, no one could have told you what Hellboy was. I mean,
but I'm telling you, I don't care what anybody says. Nobody, Iron Man is the same story.
No, I disagree.
If you were to look at the people that went to see Iron Man, huge success, I would say 95% of them had no idea what Iron Man was at all. I mean, seriously.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that far more people knew what Iron Man was than
before. I'm just trying to say, what difference does it make? In fact, you could argue, since the first Hellboy has been out, a whole lot more people would know who Hellboy was or had heard Hellboy.
Oh, yeah.
Hellboy.
Well, the movie raised that.
Okay, but
that
still.
Awareness level.
Okay, so it raised that, yet Hellboy's going to make $100 million, Iron Man's going to make worldwide $500 million.
I'm just saying, even with that awareness, in terms of looking at the fact that he's a comic book character, he's a small market comic book character. It's from Dark Horse. It's not Marvel.
I understand, but what difference does that make in terms of the scheme of movies? I mean, really?
All I'm saying is that he hasn't been around near as long. I'm just saying the public awareness is less than that of Iron Man. That's all I'm saying. You're saying Iron Man is small as well, and I'm agreeing with that. I'm just saying that it's even smaller than Iron Man.
Okay, but again, I guess what I'm saying is what difference does that make in the scheme of how successful a movie is? Since we both agree they're fairly niche, why did Iron Man instantly jump out with zillions of dollars and continue to make it, and Hellboy continues to stay in this niche thing? Why is that? And I would argue that it's because it's more of a, it's not as a mainstream visualization of movie. It's very much Del Toro, where you can get rapturous people loving it, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't have all the beats and all the flair of a big mainstream movie like Iron Man would.
I don't know what the difference. I'd be interested to see what the difference in marketing is, because I'm seeing a ton of Hellboy commercials. I'm seeing just as many Hellboy commercials as I saw Iron Man commercials. But Hellboy, you do have smaller name actors.
Yeah.
My wife has no idea who Ron Perlman is.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, I tried... It's funny, I tried to, you know, remember that old show, Beauty and the Beast? And she's like, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, Selma Blair, they're name actors, but they're smaller name actors than Gwyneth Paltrow or Robert Downey Jr., even though obviously Robert Downey Jr. was a big risk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see what you're saying. I definitely see what you're saying.
Well, it's interesting that the movie, I mean, that whoever produced the first one, they literally just gave up on it. And so this wasn't even, this was a property that was just sold to, I think, Sony or whoever. And so even though all the original creative people are back, the studio of the first movie just gave up on it, which is pretty rare. You have an actual comic book, you know, property. It's your IP that you have the right to make, and you just give up on it and sell it to another studio who gladly jumped up on it. I mean, that just
seems... You know what I bet that was? I bet that was, you know, and you, I don't know what the back... I don't know a lot of the backstory, but yeah. My guess is that there was some sort of management shuffle.
Yeah.
And whoever the incoming person was looked at this and had no idea what it was, and they're like, you know, even if it made a profit, they look at this thing based on a small market comic book no one's heard of.
Well, and I'm they sure just, they weren't. Again, I don't think they're looking at that. I think they were looking at first one didn't make that much money. Did okay.
Well, I'm sure that's a part of it, or a big part of it. But to me, it's like someone. I think it's much more confusing sell. You know, you've got a director that's cool, but he's not. You know, it's not like a Michael Bay. You know, who can sort of guarantee these spectacles. Anyway, that's just random speculation. I have no idea. But you're right. I think it's weird that that happened, because that is pretty rare.
Yeah. Yeah, the first one made worldwide $99 million. And then this one is probably on track to make like $150 million. So.
It's sort of in the same ballpark as, you know, making the Serenity movie out of the Firefly TV show.
Yeah.
You know, where they had, I think, 14, so there were 11 aired episodes. And based on, you know, fan reaction, he convinced Universal to make a movie out of this. 11 aired episodes,
yeah,
and 3 unaired episodes. You know, and he pointed to the fact, look how many... You know, look at the sales numbers of the DVD collection of this. And it was amazing that he convinced Universal to do that. And then they released the special edition of the Serenity movie. And, you know, Joss Whedon and Alan Tudyk, you know, were quoted as saying, you know, if this sells well enough, there's interest in doing a sequel. We can talk them into it. Of course, I haven't heard anything about that in months, so I don't know what's happening with it, but you're right. It's this really weird line of how do you, you know, green light a sequel if the first one made money, but kind of just barely. And if it's not, you know, you have this IP, but it's kind of weird IP. It's not, you know, you can't, it's not as easy a sell as Superman or Spider-Man.
Well, but you know, and it's funny because
or X-Files for that matter.
There's a fine line between, because a lot of movies, they do okay the first time around, but dang, when they'll decide to do a sequel and the sequel suddenly is blockbusters. You know, Batman Begins, the first one, was great, did really well, but in reality it did like $200 million domestic and not even that well foreign. Now, that seems like a lot of money, But that was a huge disappointment. They were expecting Batman Begins to do better than $200 million, especially considering it cost $150 million to make. In fact, you could probably argue the movie was profitable, but not a blockbuster. But this movie here, it's clear the new Batman is gonna be enormous. It's pretty clear that it's gonna beat the original domestic haul in probably the first 5 days. And that's like pretty extraordinary. So why is this, the first one, not so well? Look at the Austin Powers movies. The first Austin Powers movies, it was okay, But by the time the second one rolled around, it was this gigantic phenomenon. So you can see why sometimes a movie exec might go, well, you know, Hellboy, it didn't do that great, but you know, people watch it on video and DVD and, you know, it's gonna do bigger, and really it isn't doing that much bigger and better. It's a weird industry. It must be tough to take a chance on things. Anyway.
Well, it's, you know, I was listening to the, Andrew Stanton interview on The Business with Elvis, or Treatment with Elvis Mitchell. Yep. And they were talking a little bit about, some of that, and at the same time, there was a story on This Week in Media about, you know, can Pixar do no wrong, which we've sort of talked about previously. But the listening to the Andrew Stanton interview saying, you know, there's, you know, when it's all about the creativity and the fact that they're isolated up there in friggin' Marin or Emeryville.
Yeah.
But that, you know, emphasizing that they have no problem changing gears when something's not working. And saying, you know what, we're not beholden to, you know, making money. We're beholden to getting this story right. You know, so if we need to chuck a year's worth of work, then we'll do it. I guess I'm not really saying anything new. I had heard a couple of interesting things along those lines.
Yeah, I'll tell you though, there, you know, it would be interesting to see where and how WALL-E, it's just going to be interesting to see how WALL-E taps out and everything, because WALL-E was not, WALL-E's not doing, I mean, it's doing okay. But it's, again, Ratatouille ended up making a lot of money worldwide. But really, it's, in the scheme of things, in terms of domestic, Ratatouille didn't do all that great. It was, you know, it was their weakest performer since A Bug's Life. And WALL-E is probably going to beat Ratatouille, but not by much. So in the end, their two weakest performers are their two most recent movies, and that's kind of scary, you know, and so you just wonder what kind of pressures they're getting on it, because just sort of, you know, you'll hear a lot, I hear a lot about, in the industry, they talk about Cars. Now, Cars didn't do as rapturously well as, say, like Finding Nemo did, but it did well, but it sort of agreed upon that Cars was far and away their most successful movie in terms of ancillary stuff. Disney is making a fortune on Cars, the Disney on Ice show, Cars, the rides, Cars, this and that. And so Disney definitely is going to pressure them to say, do more movies like Cars, where we can do all this, you know, tie in and have other stuff. And it's, and I'm trying to imagine the WALL-E ride, you know, and other stuff.
As long as the current management structure is in place at Pixar, I don't think that'll matter one bit.
I don't necessarily disagree, but it's interesting because now Lasseter is effectively a bigwig at Disney. He's not necessarily a bigwig at Pixar, and there will be pressures, you know? I'm not saying it's good or bad, but at a certain point when somebody looks at it goes, boy, let's just step back and look and go, dang, we really aren't making the money. I mean, they're all making money, and they're rapturously received, but dang, we're just not making the money. Maybe we can. You know, I don't know. I just look at it, and I worry, because even though we all talk about how successful they are, in fact, WALL-E and Ratatouille, at least domestically, are definitely huge steps down from Finding Nemo, even The Incredibles, Monster Inc. These are all way bigger movies domestically, you know.
Yeah, but I don't hear anyone freaking out about it. You know, I don't hear any excuses either. But to me, you've got more animated films.
You're not going to hear anybody freaking out about it. They are so good about keeping a tight lip on things.
It's sort of the attitude of nobody. You know, for whatever reason, those particular films did insanely great, and no one is expecting us to repeat that, where as long as we're, you know, creatively happy and able to survive, that's sufficient.
Yeah, but, you know, another way to look at it, though, is, you know, the costs of producing these things are creeping up hugely. I'm at Box Office Mojo, and they're saying that, so if you look at, say, Monsters, Inc., production budget, like $115 million. Wall-E, $180 million. And you got to assume with marketing, they spent $275 million making a movie. Well, that suddenly gets pretty expensive. I mean, $275 million making a cartoon movie.
Well, you just pulled that number out of your butt. Well,
there was $180 million to produce it, and the standard rate for marketing is typically half or sometimes the exact cost of it. But $75 million is nothing for marketing. I'm not pulling that out of my butt. Do you think they spent nothing on it?
I didn't say that. I'm just saying you just have to acknowledge that it's a speculative number.
Well, it is. But I'm saying speculative based on what other movies will often spend on marketing. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I find the marketing discussions interesting just because there are some movies where you feel like all you're seeing is that movie. And there are others when, for whatever reason, you get no exposure whatsoever. Like I said, I feel like everywhere I go, I'm seeing Hellboy commercials.
Yeah, but that's a product of effective marketing on their part because they've determined you're the target audience.
No, I'm just saying that in terms of the shows I watch and the websites I go to, it's either you're seeing a bunch of stuff or you're not. And to me, it's kind of a warped view of whether or not they're reaching a general audience or the size of the overall campaign. And I'm not. You know, this isn't an argumentative point. I'm just saying it's interesting. I just find that interesting that, you know, I'll feel like I'll be assaulted with messaging for something versus other things I've got, you know, I hear nothing on.
Yeah.
So it just the effectiveness of the targeting on that, I find really interesting and how that can, you know, if all I'm seeing is Hellboy commercials, then, you know, does that make me assume that it's got a gigantic budget, or is it just that they're targeting and everything they've spent is managing to reach me?
I think it's probably more of the latter. I think they've determined whatever shows you're watching, you're their kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, let's move onwards. Yeah. We'll briefly touch on video games just cause, E3 is this week. I think it'll be really interesting. I think a lot of people are really interested to see what Microsoft is going to do because the PlayStation 3 is catching up. There seems to be a vibe, at least reading websites and whatnot, that, you know, PS3 is catching up and Microsoft isn't really addressing it effectively.
Yeah.
Let me tell you,
the fact that it has that, it just sort of psychologically, the fact that the Blu-ray won the war and the fact that this is far and away the cheapest Blu-ray machine, you know,
is that still the case though?
Yeah, it is. It's like $400 and Blu-ray machines are cheapest ones I've seen around there, like $500, which is ridiculous. But,
well,
you know, so psychologically, I'm just looking at this going, dang, that's, I don't know, I can sort of see for that reason alone, like if I wasn't so wedded to the Xbox, I can see, you know, in a different world going, well, geez, of course I'm going to get the PlayStation because it's got Blu-ray.
Yeah, I definitely see that. This week in media every so often does a blurb about how Blu-ray sales just really aren't that great though.
Well, but
it's like Blu-ray won and it's like, so what?
Well, it's because it's ridiculously expensive. I mean,
well, I think people were expecting once there was a winner between Blu-ray and HD DVD that sales would increase a lot more than they have.
I read a really interesting article by the head of Sony. And, it was like an interview in CPU magazine and he was so goddamn smug. And he talked about, you know, they're saying, okay, so now will the price, you know, go down or whatever? And will you kind of essentially take it as a loss to build up market? And he was basically saying, no, we've been doing that. We won. We're going to profit on this and not this summer, but probably next summer is when you'll start seeing the $199 players. So basically saying that not summer, I mean Christmas. So basically saying Christmas of 2009 is when they'll get down to a reasonable point. Cause he's basically saying, oh, we've won this, and in the long run, we're going to do it. But right now, we're going to maximize profits. So we're going to get rid of all the buy a player, get five free, you know, Blu-ray discs. We're gonna keep milking the high end and make money, and then we'll start lowering the price. And I thought, oh, what a jerk, you know. So in other words, it's just not. There's no plans on it to happen anytime particularly soon.
Well, we will. I mean, it really is. I mean, but God, it's such a weird thing because it's no longer an apples to apples comparison. Because since Xbox doesn't have HD DVD to use anymore, you know, comparing sales, because you don't know who's buying PS3s just for the ability to see Blu-ray movies. And you hear these weird statistics or stories every so often about, you know, X number of PS3 owners don't even know it can play Blu-ray discs, which I find so on its face ridiculous. You know, that so-and-so bought it as a Blu-ray player, and they don't even use it to play games. Hmm. You know, you hear weird stories like that. The numbers will shift, and it almost doesn't even matter. But,
well, I played my brother's, and I'll tell you, I don't like the controller at all. The Xbox controller is about as good of a controller as I've ever played in my life.
I completely agree. If I'll spend 3 or 4 hours playing at once, which is pretty rare, my hands feel great. There's no cramping, you know, the buttons, it just works. And it's a beautiful piece of design.
And then the other thing is with
the exception of the D-pad, everyone agrees that the directional pad kind of sucks, but since you almost never need it.
Yeah. And then, I didn't know that. I didn't have a problem with the D-pad, but anyway, the other thing with the Xbox is the whole achievement system, and they're trying to do something now with Sony called
they're calling theirs trophies,
which is kind of dumb, but at least they're realizing, hey, that's a important part of things. So, you know,
one thing though is that Sony released a patch 2 weeks ago, you know, a firmware upgrade that you could download through the network, and it bricked their consoles.
Jesus.
And to me, that's just insane. How is your testing not catching that?
Wow. Unbelievable.
And it's just, I mean, it's a, you know, give them credit that, you know, they gambled on the whole Blu-ray thing and it appears to be working.
Yep.
But I'm curious what the, you know, when the next, where will they be when the, you know, the next generation Xbox comes out? Because they've definitely, you know, Microsoft also took a gamble by releasing their next gen machine ahead of Sony's.
Yeah.
You know, and they reached 10 million units in the U.S., which previously they had declared the winning line.
Yeah.
And they announced it, and nobody cared. And it's like Sony shrugged and said, okay, we're still selling at a higher rate right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, but what sells the console is the games. And right now, there's still nothing for the PS3 that I care about, that I want to go out and buy or spend $400 on.
Yeah, well, I have a game machine. It's called the Xbox, so I wouldn't. Wouldn't matter.
Well, and the games they're producing for it are beautiful. I was like, there's a few Sony exclusives. You know, Metal Gear Solid 4 came out. Is that it? Metal Gear Solid?
Yeah, I have so little interest in that. The way they describe it, it just seems weird. The storyline seems very like Final Fantasy Japanese weird, and I'm not into that at all, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not into literally a 45-minute cutscene, which apparently is in this movie. I mean, literally, they're trying to make it cinematic, but I don't like that. Even in the best games, even in Grand Theft Auto, I found myself just clicking through past some of the cutscenes because I just don't care. I just want to play the game, and that's like the creme de la creme.
Yeah, and so there's nothing there that's a big draw for me right now. I mean, if I had a ton of disposable income, which I don't see happening forever, you know, sure, I'd get it just because of Blu-ray. And, you know, I'd go out and buy Batman Begins again and, you know, and Lord of the Rings when that comes out and the remastered Godfathers. Sure. But at the same time, you know, my existing Godfather box set is perfectly adequate.
Yeah.
It's not like I need to see Sonny get shot up in additional lines of resolution for me to enjoy it anymore.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Anyway, let's move over to iPhone.
Okay.
Because I have to tell my friggin' story.
Okay.
You sound like you have no interest in this.
No, I'm totally interested. Now, although I'm very jealous because I was definitely 2 weeks ago assuming I was going to get one, and that plan went by the wayside. So, but anyway, tell me about it.
Oh my god. Okay, so goes on sale Friday morning at 8 a.m. So my plan was, because the way my work situation is, I end up sometimes working a short Friday.
Yeah.
Usually that means I go in early and I'm done early afternoon. But one of my coworkers was on vacation last week and I had to cover. Anyway, so my plan was that I would drive by one of the AT&T stores on my way into work, and just see what the situation was. And if it wasn't that bad, sure, I'll get in and just pick it up that way.
Yep.
The big X factor is no one knew what the demand was going to be. And at the same time, no one knew how long it was going to take to cycle people through the stores, because you had to activate in store, which is different from last time when it was just buy it, take it home, activate it through iTunes whenever you want. People bitched about it because there were delays in the system. They would go home and plug it in last time, and it would, you know, it might activate a day later. So, you know, not everyone took that long, but it took a while in some cases. Anyway, so, you know, in an effort to fight, you know, people hacking these things that, you know, whoops. Hey, dude.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I didn't even know you were gone.
No, I heard you, and then all of a sudden I realized I had touched my microphone and managed to turn it off again. So anyway.
Anyway, you know, they've got this new activation procedure, which is designed to reduce the hackable unlocked units.
Yeah, basically, yeah. They're just trying to make sure that people aren't leaving without activating it, so they control that. Which is
weird because
the whole point to that was, it wasn't so much that, my understanding was that they were being sold internationally. Well, now they're in like 100 countries or whatever.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think part of it's that, part of it's that because AT&T is now quote unquote subsidizing the cost of part of it, that serves some other AT&T purpose. Anyway, there were only, you know, I live in the suburbs of the east side suburbs of Seattle. So you go to the AT&T website, there were only two stores. And I guess there was one in Issaquah, but that's not really convenient at all.
Yeah.
There were two stores on the entire east side selling it.
Really?
And ironically, they were within about a mile of each other.
Really? They're not selling them at every store?
No. There was the one in Redmond Town Center, and there was one on Redmond Way, literally a mile
away. That's so weird.
And I don't know if it's because of company-owned stores versus franchises, if it's something like that. I don't know what the
If you were AT&T and you're investing in all this, wouldn't you want it in every store? That's so bizarre.
I don't know, but here's the thing. I drove by one and I saw the line for one, and I just drove on by and I went to the Redmond Way one, and I. And there was a line in front of it of probably 30, 40, 50 people. I'm not good at estimating crowd size. I pull up, roll down my window and asked it. And this is probably about 9:05, 9:10. So it just got on sale. And I said, you know, is the line moving at all? And they said, not really, but it doesn't even matter because they only have 30 iPhones, and there's clearly more than 30 people in line.
Jesus.
So I gave them a sarcastic thumbs up, great, and went to work. And then I monitored the situation throughout the workday, checking Engadget and, Gizmodo and various websites throughout the day. And, you know, lines going down, and then their activation servers went down.
Well, they flubbed it so bad. I mean, in retrospect, of course, they released the update to all the existing iPhone users on the same day, so their infrastructure was just swamped. I mean, in retrospect, what were they thinking?
I'm curious to know if it actually was just an overload or if there was a flaw which suddenly caused some, you know, if there was some other error other than an overload.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious, the Occam's razor, you know, answer is that there was just too much traffic.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you're seeing that, and then you're seeing, well, people are, I'm doing something on my TV. And so people were being sent home and being told to activate them at home.
I know, after all that.
Which to me, it's like, okay, fine, that answers the, that solves the line question. But then before I left work, they got the servers back up and running. And I thought, okay, I'll call the Apple store in the local mall at lunch. Maybe I'll run down at lunch and get it. And I called, and at that point they had 200 people in line. So that's not going to happen. So, okay, then I'll do it after work. Just obviously both the AT&T stores are going to be completely sold out. So I go to the Apple. I call the Apple store at 4:30 Friday afternoon, and I say, are you still in stock of the 16-gigabyte models? And what's your line? She said, oh, yeah, we got plenty. There's about 100 people in line. And I thought, okay, that sounds all right. You know, that's a wait, clearly, but I bet it's moving. So I run down to the mall store, and they had about 40 people in one of those mazes.
Yeah.
Like you're waiting in line for a Space Mountain, yeah, or something. So you get to the end of that, and the guy's like, oh, no, this is just part one. You need to go over there. And he points you to a service corridor where the rest of the nerds are lined up. Yeah. And in actuality, there probably were about 100 people in line when I got there, which was at 5 o'clock. But they were going very slowly. Yeah. You know, the servers were just getting hammered, so it was taking forever to activate them. And I've been told about 2.5 or 3 hours in line. And I was like, well, you know, I'm a grown man. There's a level of ridiculousness, but okay, I'll accept that. I'll get in line. Well, turns out, why is my DVR suddenly freaking out? It took well over 5 hours to actually get in the store. Did not get in the Apple store until after 10 o'clock. Which just, it sucked. It was horrible. I mean, the people in line were pretty good. Sometimes when you're in line next to someone that's stupid or just vapid and just babbling, you just want to shoot yourself. Yeah. It's so bad. In this case, I was around some pretty good people. Ironically, there was at least 5 or 6 within my immediate circle that worked at Microsoft, which I thought was hysterical. Finally get in the store, begin the activation process. And it was clear that the guy helping me had just sort of been thrown in because they had trained people to do the activation.
Yeah.
And this guy had only just sort of been given the 5-minute version. His hands were shaking. He was kind of like, oh my God.
Great.
So, they get started, but, we were on our AT&T plan is apparently under a corporate discount,
yep,
you know, through my wife's work. She's just like, oh, hey, we get like a 10% off thing. I'll sign this up. I'm like, whatever.
Yep.
But what that meant was we couldn't upgrade plans.
Oh, great.
So of course the guy doesn't know what to do with it, and he asks someone else, and they're like, what we think we can do is hook you up with a new plan. You call AT&T tomorrow, and then they migrate your account over to your old existing number, and then they kill the new account.
That's great to hear the words, what we think you can do is.
Yeah. And so I'm looking at that, I'm like, you know, fine. I feel there's no chance in hell that's going to work. But if I leave, I will have invalidated the last 5 hours of my life.
Yeah.
And actually, the pisser about that is, I called Wednesday morning on my way to work. I called AT&T to verify that I was upgrade eligible, which I should have been because I've had the same phone for 3 years.
Yep.
And I said, oh, hey, and I've got this discount plan. Is that going to be a problem? And the AT&T person said, no, it's fine. You're good to go. So that was horrible customer experience.
Yep.
Anyway, halfway through the activation process, the servers go down again.
Nice.
Only this time it's AT&T servers down for scheduled maintenance, apparently.
What?
And they're not coming back up till 5 a.m.
How in the world could they plan that?
Well, I heard scheduled maintenance the next day. At the time, it was just that the AT&T servers were down.
But
they're not coming back up.
That's the most insane thing I've ever heard. They would schedule maintenance during one of the biggest, you know, days on the planet for their product, for the company. That's bizarre.
So we're in there, and there's nothing they can do. And at this point, they're not sending you home with an unactivated phone for whatever reason. So they gave out business cards and vouchers and said, you know, this lets you skip to the, you come back tomorrow. You can skip to the beginning of the line. Yep. And it's, you know, and they, you know, the Apple Store employees were very apologetic, and I felt for them. There's nothing they can do. But at the same time, you know, it's now 11 o'clock at night.
Yep.
I have now spent 6 hours just to get this stupid thing on the day it comes out, and I've got nothing to show for it other than a sense of incredible humiliation and embarrassment. That I now have to go home to my wife and say, hey, I just spent Friday evening in line at a mall for nothing.
Nice.
Oh, my God. I was so mad. Just that I'd wasted the time, because I'm so efficient and I so hate to waste time. Yeah. Anyway, so I woke up and I ran down. So I went down to the Apple Store yesterday morning, Saturday morning. Got there about 5 minutes after they opened, and there was already, you know, the maze was full, and I don't know how long the service corridor line was. But I show the security guard my get out of jail free card. You get in, there's a line of about 10 people inside the store. And so I get to the end of that, and half of it is people from the previous night. And it took about an hour to get through and get served. Fortunately, before I left, I called AT&T and had them take off the corporate discount. So even though I went in and I'm like, there's no way it's going to work, I'm going to get the same problem. But I don't care. I'm just going to go in there and roll the dice.
Yeah.
But I went in, waited in line for an hour. In the middle of waiting in line, the store manager or the assistant manager decides to change how they're seeing people. Previously, it had just been whoever had gotten there. But now they're doing it in the order that the business cards were handed out because they had numbered them.
Yep.
But the problem with that was that they had inconsistently done the numbering.
Great.
So that the guy who was like first in line to be seen next, he was number one. I was already in process of being seen, but I was number 14.
Great.
So anyway, there was frustration with that. I finally got through. Guy helped me. The upgrade went through without a problem. They were in stock, and I finally got it. But all told, 7 hours of waiting to get this thing.
Nice.
And it's, you know, and there's a degree of, you hear that stock is running out and they're selling out, and it's like, oh my God, I was ready to buy this thing the day of the announcement.
Yep.
I've had to, you know, the fact that I had to wait 2 or 3 weeks just drove me nuts. And the fact that I would have to, even though if you wait a week, you can just waltz in 5 minutes and get this thing handled and get it done.
That's right.
I was so consumerist and so American, and I need to have this thing now. I can't wait any longer. I will wait in line 7 hours to get this stupid thing.
Nice.
Anyway, that's my story. That's my drama. And now I have a 16 gigabyte black iPhone.
So what do you think?
I like it so far. I've been slowly, moving music over, you know, moving all my photos over, that took forever. Trying out different things from the App Store. So far, though, I really haven't found anything at the App Store, which is gotta have it. Excuse me. Partly because right now I'm only looking in the free apps.
Yeah.
I downloaded a couple of games. I'm probably going to delete one of them. It's kind of stupid. I went on iTunes YouTube last night, and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try and find Lazy Sunday, the video that launched YouTube, and I couldn't find it. It's not on there anymore.
Well, yeah,
there's about a gazillion spoofs and parodies, but the original SNL digital short,
what's because SNL didn't come up. Pulled off. They pulled everything off. SNL's like the worst for that stuff,
which is, I mean, I can understand, you know, I can understand if you're a content owner and you're freaking out about it, but Lazy Sunday launched YouTube. It sort of gave this renaissance to SNL, where suddenly people were talking about SNL again. And to me, the fact that they did that is just, I mean, that's a different discussion, but that's cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm still getting the hang of it. I'm slowly moving music over. I'm using Safari, and it's going pretty good. One downside is apparently the 3G coverage at my house is like one bar. It's pretty unexceptional.
Well, apparently at least you have 3G coverage, because it's not totally ubiquitous, my understanding.
Well, it's not a big deal at my house because I can hook it up into my wireless network. Yeah. But I still have to hook up. I still have to get my Gmail and my Yahoo Mail working on this thing. But I've played a little bit with the maps, and that was pretty impressive. Like I was showing my wife last night. Look how cool this is! It'll do directions from our house to your parents' house in Arizona, and she's like, okay. You know, that doesn't impress her at all.
Yeah.
So far, it's good. You know, to me, it'll be really interesting to see what it's like to live with it. It's like, okay, I'm in line. I can surf the web. I don't need to be bored anymore. Or, you know, I can find a map to where I'm going if I'm lost. Or I can actually find a restaurant, you know, using the search feature and the GPS. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how I do with it, because I've been wanting this thing for so long, and also how the memory management works, and will I find that 16 gigabytes is just, I'm running up against that all the time.
Yeah.
So far, because I've got a 32 gigabyte or 30 gigabyte iPod Photo, which I've got just about all of my music on. So I'm used to having all of my music, you know, accessible whenever I want it.
Yeah.
And having to pick and choose, but going through so far and picking and choosing, it's actually been okay. It's like, you know what? I have a bunch of albums on here really just for one or two singles.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to miss it if I just move that single over I don't need the rest of this.
I know for me, I mean, it won't be perfect, but when I get mine eventually, hopefully at some point, I am almost certainly going to use my 30 gig iPod just to keep in my car for having access to everything, and then the phone will be everywhere else. So if I really want to listen to everything, which is usually going to be in the car, I'll have it. It'll be in the car. You know, I still have to take it, and I have to keep it charged. But even I don't actually have to keep it charged. As long as if I'm not using it to listen to my podcast or whatever, I'll just keep it in there. It'll just be my gigantic CD collection effectively in the car. It'll be like a 100-disc CD changer that's sitting in a little convenient package in my car.
Yeah, and the interesting thing will be how the battery life behaves, because
I heard that it sucks it down more with the 3G network, I heard.
Right. Well, my thing is, I'll be, you know, there are days at work when I spend most of the day listening to podcasts or music as I'm working. And so if I'm doing that, does that,
it into a USB thing?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, if I didn't do that, because it sounds like you pretty much have to charge it every night. But I'm, you know, well, am I leaving myself enough battery for one phone call if I spend the whole day using the iPod?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, how sort of the daily use does or doesn't, you know, let you drive home and still actually be able to use the cell phone if you need to.
Yeah. So let me tell you real quick about my experiences with Comcast. Okay. So I signed up for Fios finally, and they came out actually last week to pre-prepare. Essentially, they have to run fiber optic to your house in anticipation of the crew guy coming in next Thursday, which is cool. So they go and do that. And later on that afternoon, or maybe it was the day later, somebody shows up to my door wearing a Comcast shirt. And wants to talk about, you know, and he said something to the effect of, you know, you probably noticed we've been upgrading the stuff in your neighborhood and something to the effect of want to talk to you about Comcast service or whatever. And essentially what they're doing, it appears, is they're going around taking advantage of people seeing all the Fios stuff and hearing about it and trying to get people logged on. I mean, Comcast is really obviously freaked out. So I listened for a minute, but then I couldn't resist. I just had to tell him how happy I was that I signed up for Fios and how much I hate Comcast. So this poor guy, and I told them about, you know, how they ripped my dad off and how does he realize they're about to win the consumerist golden turd award for the worst company in America, and but he was taken aback by that, and then he was saying, well, you know, we want to be competitive, and I'm thinking, you know, yeah, competitive. Well, I mean, I was ticked because I'm going, yeah, Comcast only gets competitive when there's competitors. When there's no other competitors, they don't do anything. So,
So
what he was describing as competitive, at least for right now, definitely wasn't, because I'm getting 20 megs upload or download, 5 megs upload versus their, you know, their quote blast service, which is 15.2 or whatever. So anyway, suffice it to say, I was, and the guy finally left, but I was like, oh, feeling great. Then I wrote about it on the blog, and then on the next day, now, I didn't get the message because I was gone all day, but somebody from Comcast called. Apparently, they've been reading our blog.
And no way.
I kid you not. And God dang it, if the message didn't get cut off halfway through it. But it was somebody, it was some, clearly, I think a PR person or something, that wanted to talk about the things they had read on the blog. And I don't know, and I only heard half of it, and I don't know if they were, like, wanting to threaten because it was, you know, they thought I was being misleading, or they wanted to explain or whatever. And I wish I had, like, the guy had left his phone number, and if you're listening, dude, call me back, or better yet, email me. But there was, but it was funny. I was thinking, boy, I don't know what they're worried about, because I went back and looked at my Google Analytics and realized. So I look at like the 3 days prior to them calling. We had one visitor, zero visitors, one visitor, zero visitors, one visitor, and then on the day that they called, there was 17 visitors, pretty much all from Pennsylvania, which is clearly Comcast headquarters. And then back to one visitors, and then the last 2 days, zero visitors and zero visitors. So it's like an audience of them. They're the only ones reading about it. And I don't know, I had to laugh, but, you know, well, to the guy's credit, the guy was actually quite nice, but Comcast is clearly freaking out. I mean, the amount of energy they're putting into this thing. So, but right now I'm prepared to just, forget about Comcast, and I'm really excited about Verizon, and who knows, maybe Verizon will be my new enemy. So. Oh, and by the way, I didn't tell you, but about a month ago, I got an email, like a Digital Millennium Copyright Act kind of email, saying that my videos, now you probably know from at my old job, I did videos, and you know, there's always that worry, do you put copyrighted music in these videos because it's illegal and yada yada, and they're these fundraising videos. And I did one where I didn't even bother hiding it. I actually called the video At Last, because I used Etta James At Last. I figured if somebody wants me to, I put it on YouTube, and somebody wants me to take it down, I'll take it down. I mean, it's no big deal. I mean, I just thought, what the hell? I'll put it up, because there's millions like that, and it's like I'm not worried they're going to sue me because I'm not making money off it, but I'll take it down if somebody asks. So I get an email. What was interesting was it says, we've determined that you're using this music in this video, so here's our solution. We're going to keep it up, but we are going to place advertisements on it. Meaning, you know, those ads, those little flash ads that you get over the top of some YouTube videos. Essentially, they've clearly worked out a deal with music publishers that says, listen, it's not in your interest to have these people take them down. We can figure out a way for you can make money from them. So, which I thought was actually a great solution. Rather than scaring people and telling them to take down their stuff, saying, listen, you're profiting from, or you're not profiting, but we could profit from this, and you're benefiting from using our music. Let's come up with a solution. So they did that. So now this one video has like a little, you know, ad, whereas in before it wouldn't. And I thought that was interesting. So anyway.
It is interesting. But I got a buddy who's about to show up and make noise, okay. So I need to sign off.
Okay, dude.
So,
you have to write up your iPod, your iPhone experience at some point.
Oh, I know. I will. I haven't had time yet. I definitely will. I know what the headline of the post is going to be. Good. Epic fail.
Good.
So my name's Matt.
And I am Richard.
And, thank you for listening to Mustard Analytics. See you next time.